Okay, so Andrew, thanks for the introduction. So, good morning everyone. And I decided to make a sort of tutorial for today, because maybe, I guess, most of you are not very accustomed with this kind of experiment I'm going to show. And so I will try to proceed in a very systematic way on what is currently available in this field on the market, let's say. So the topic is how to induce coherence in thermal transport thanks to superconducting condensate. Okay. So we'll start from let's see the outline. So I will show what is the motivation and the mission of this science, new branch of science of physics that is called phase coherent calorimetrics. Okay, I will start to give you some overview of what is how are addressed the topics of this this research field. The basic concept of thermal transport in Joyce-based quantum circuits. So I will introduce a double and single slit heat interferometer, so how it is possible to make interference with heat thanks to electrons. I will show some results on balanced thermal modulators, so that are some improved version with respect to a conventional heat interferometers. Then I will go in the direction of a more sophisticated circuit that is the Joyce-Sonde thermal pi junction. So it is the thermal version of a pi junction that is exploited in Joyce-Sonde charged circuits. And then I will end with the concept of how to orient and distribute thermal currents on chips. So with the first realization of a phase-tunable Joyce-Sonde thermal router. Okay, so please feel free to interrupt whenever you want, because of course this is, mainly is an audience of theorists, so I would I understand that maybe many things will not be clear. So, so let's start with the motivation of the mission. So what was the idea already, let's say, 5 years ago when we started doing this, when we started to open this this research field? So the idea was to send the experimental ground for a new branch of science that is called coherent calorimetrics. So calorimetrics is a word deriving from Latin calor, that means heat, okay? So it is intended to be the complementary of coherent electronics. So the main goal is to phase manipulate and master heat transfer in a fully solid state environment, okay? And to provide some original and novel approach to reliable thermal devices in general, so transistors, heat splitters, diodes, and refrigerators, and more exotic quantum circuits that take advantage of this above mentioned building block to enhance their functionalities, okay? From the fundamental point of view, the goal is to address and understand fundamental energy and heat-related phenomena at nanoscale. For instance, coherent dynamics, interference of thermal currents, time-dependent effect, quantum thermodynamics, the aspect of the coherence. Okay, so in a nutshell, the main goal is to develop quantum technology for managing heat in nanoscale circuits. So this is more or less the idea of coherent calorimetrics. So just to clarify at the beginning our vision on the problem, in the last, let's say, 30 years, there have been a lot of effort, let's say, from the 80s and 90s, and especially in the group of Chernogolov in the ex-Soviet Union, about thermoelectric effects in Joyce-Sonde junctions. Okay, so Joyce-Sonde typically they were allied with a sandwich of superconductor or metal superconductor junctions, thermally biased, and there they were exploring thermoelectric response. So the thermal response to the electric response to a thermal stimulus of the junction. Okay, And they were able to extract some properties of the order, like the Seebeck effect of the order of 10 to the minus 10 nanovolt per Kelvin. So very, very small. And this set, in some sense, the starting point for the investigation of thermoelectricity in Joule junction. Okay. In what I'm going to show in all this talk here, we are not dealing with thermoelectricity. So there is no thermoelectric response in the usual sense of our system. Okay. So this is very important to remind. So they in this case they investigated both in thermal response and also in the presence of magnetic field. Okay. So, but this has nothing to do with what I'm going to show. So in what I'm going to show, the thermal response of the system is only based on the heat current in the system. Okay. So pure heat current transport. The system are just thermally biased. There is no any voltage drop occurring to this thermal stimulus because, as I will show you, the Joule junction basically do not possess any thermoelectric response, conventional Joule junction. Then one can create artificial and sophisticated Joule junction that possesses very nice and important thermoelectric response. Okay, but in all the experiments I'm going to show, basically the junction do not possess at all any thermoelectric response. Okay, so in the following, we will deal only with the heat currents and interference of heat currents in Joule birth circuits. Okay, so in this slide, the idea is to show what is the physical basis of phase coherent calorimetrics. So what does it matter? The idea is represented in this first cartoon, where it resembles something that everybody knows from thermodynamics. So the idea is to have reservoirs, two different reservoirs, hot and cold, at different temperature, the hot and the cold. And the idea is to conceive physical or novel, or discover novel physical mechanism that allow to control, thanks to the superconducting phase, the amount of heat current that is transferred from one part to the other. Okay, the idea is to exploit the superconducting microscopic phase of the conducting condensate in order to put coherence in the thermal transport. Okay, this is the idea, and to see and to discover novel and exciting properties. So, towards this end, we have, chosen three different approaches, three different routes to go in this direction. Okay, so the first one is here on the left, is based on the pure Joule effect. So the idea is to use the temperature-biased superconductor-insulator-superconductor Joule junction. Phi is the phase difference between the condensates. And then, as I will show you later, to exploit the phase-dependent component of thermal current originating in this kind of junction to implement novel kinds of devices. Okay. The second approach, the second route, is based on proximity effect. What is proximity effect? Proximity effect, especially in superconductivity, indicates basically the capability of a superconductor to induce the superconducting-like properties in another conductor thanks to its intimate contact. Okay? So to obtain a large proximity effect, we need a good metallic contact between a superconductor and another non-originally based superconducting metal. Okay? Thanks to this, it's possible to induce strong correlations. What does it mean to induce a superconducting-like correlation in, for instance, this S prime metal? This means that the properties of this proximity metal, or let's say artificial superconductor, become phase-dependent. In this sense, this means that the density of states of the metal becomes phase-dependent, and according to this, this will have impact on the entropy, electronic entropy of the metal. It becomes phase-dependent.
I thought this was the superconductor, and the outer ones were the normal.
Yes, this is S prime. I call this S prime a proximity superconductor.
So it's an artificial
superconductor. It is obtained thanks to intimate contact with another superconducting metal.
But the ends are normal metals, yes?
On the lateral side is a normal metal. So these are the artificial superconductor is tandem coupled to additional electrodes and left and right to implement this scheme here.
So there's some other superconductor nearby.
Yes, I mean, this is a fully general scheme. So you create with some means your artificial superconductor and then you contact with other electrodes, okay? The important thing to keep in mind is that the superconductor, artificial superconductor, this proximity metal, let's say, is altered in the sense that its spectral properties are fully determined by the phase. So the denser states that impacts on the entropy, on the specific heat, and thermal conductance, for so on, and electrical conductance will be all the phase dependent. So thanks to this, we can control the amount of flow that is driven from one reservoir to the other reservoir. So we have an active way, thanks to the flux, to control this this current here. Another important properties is the fact that thanks to this modified spectral density inside a superconductor, we can affect the energy relaxation between the electrons, or quasiparticles, say, and the lattice phonons inside the metal. Because the electron phonon coupling becomes phase dependent. So this means that we can play at will with the phase to control the exchange rate between the electrons, the quasiparticles, and the lattice phonon. So this is an additional very interesting property. So this is the second approach. The third approach is the following. So how do, if there is a possibility, it is probably the most exotic in some sense, if there is a possibility to conceive a pure thermal transport in a fully non-galvanic way. So typically all this, the first and the second approach deals with object in galvanic contact. So they are contacted through clean metallic contact or through tunnel junction, let's say. The third approach is to have reservoirs at a distance on chip, separated physically by some distance and not in galvanic contact. And then this exploits the possibility to exchange heat from one side to the other, let's say in a wireless way, okay? Let's say in this way. So thanks to photons of the environment that everybody of you knows very well. So we are, the idea is to work with a fully solid state environment and then to exchange heat currents from one side to the other thanks to an intermediate quantum circuit. In this case, here is represented, for instance, by a superconducting quantum resonator, a squid or whatever. And then control the amount of heat flowing from one side to the other just by changing the impedance, let's say, for the heat current, for the photonic heat current from one part to the other, thanks to these intermediate circuits. So by changing the flux, for instance, we are dealing here with a superconducting interferometer, we are able to control the impedance, and thanks to this change of the impedance, we can control the amount of heat transfer from one part to the other part. Even in this condition, it's possible to realize refrigerator or some other kind of structures, okay? Rectifiers and so forth. So on. Yes?
I have a question.
Yes.
You said that you only look at some heat currents for thermoelectronics, and that you don't look at thermoelectric effect. But the heat current is carried by electrons, no? So there will be in all your setup some charge current, but you don't look at that, you just look at the heat current.
Well, the net. Yes, it's a good question. What we can say is that all the circuits are electrically open. Mm. So there is no net current flowing to the circuit, charge current, just heat current. So you heat one part, and you heat, and maybe you monitor the temperature on the other reservoir, but there is never a charge current flowing closed, okay? So the circuit is electrically open, always, but thermally closed.
Then you develop a voltage bias eventually?
No. I was telling you. So there is no thermoelectric response, because in the system here, we are not breaking any electron hole symmetry. This is the point, because it's superconductivity. Unless you put some different things inside. So if you put some exchange fields so that you break time reversal symmetry, spin-dependent barriers. So in this case, you can obtain very exotic also thermoelectric effect.
What about quasi-particles? Are you always below the gap, or do you ever think about quasi-particles?
Right? No, we are dealing with a strong of quasi-particles.
So here you don't break time reversal symmetry.
We never break time reversal symmetry. So basically, these systems do not possess, as I have described up to now, any thermoelectric response. And so they are all, let's say, all the thermally biased, and there is no net charge flow in the system. There is no voltage drop occurring thanks to any thermoelectric effect in these simplified circuits. There is only a lot of heat current flowing from one side to the other. And the goal is to understand how the heat flow is moving, and how can we manipulate and conceive a novel system to manipulate the heat current in the system. Okay, so this is the idea. So let's start with. I will start showing basically the first route. So how to exploit Joyce-Sonne tunnel circuits to go to the second. Okay, so here. There are very simple schemes to show how a Joyce-Sonne interferometer can be created. So, for instance, you see there are in the panel, in the top panel, we have two reservoirs that are the hot and the cold reservoir. This is coupled to a central building block that is a DC squid. Okay, so these are two superconductors separated by two tunnel junctions in parallel. Okay. The system can be pierced, the ring can be pierced by magnetic flux that allow to change the interference of the system here. So the system here implements a double slit interferometer. Okay, a double slit thanks to these two junctions here. So thanks to this, I will show later, if we impose a gradient between N1 on the left and N2, so this is hotter than this will create a heat current flow in the system here. And if one part of the ring is held at lower temperature, so there is a net heat current from this guy here, S1 and S2. And this heat current here will become fully phase dependent. So as a result, the full heat transfer from the left to the right will be affected by the magnetic field. This is just what is happens in this kind of interferometer. So it's the temperature of this electrode here monitored as a function of the external flux applied to the ring. And so you see that the temperature is nicely oscillated. It's the experimental cure with superimposed. The black one is the theoretical expectation. Really a very nice contour between the...
Okay, I think we can start.
Okay, so... Just to introduce quickly the concept, so this is a cartoon for phase-dependent control of heat current in solid-state system. So, the ability to exploit new physical effects that use the superconductive phase to control heat currents flowing in different parts of the quantum circuits. Okay? So, our main toolbox for the moment will be the exploitation of a temperature bias horizontal tunnel junction. So two superconducting electrodes separated by an insulating junction and residing at different temperatures. Okay. So the system here will be, as I was saying, the toolbox to realize our schemes. And in such systems, the heat current was predicted to be phase-dependent stationary by Mackey and Griffin in 1965. So since 1965 up to 2012, there was no experimental demonstration of the validity of this effect here.
And this is only 1 year after Joseph's.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So it's amazing they were thinking about this already back in the 60s.
Yeah. Craziness is And apparently, this is a very interesting paper dealing with the entropy of superconductors, okay, Joyce-Sonne coupled superconductors. And it had something like 8 citations in almost 60 years. Funny, no? I mean, Mackey and Griffin, two big names. But apparently, people were not very interested in this kind of aspect. So,
so why is it surprising that there's a stationary heat current? I mean, that's what you expect in the. What do you mean by a phase dependent, I get, but. Stationary. Yes, but if you have, you know, two reservoirs to different temperatures, you wait for some time, and there will always be a stationary heat current. No?
Yes, but this can be also a time-dependent current, no?
But if you have no time dependence in it at all, you would always expect stationary heat current.
Yes, but so indeed I'm saying it's phase-dependent when it's stationary. This is the point. Otherwise it becomes average to zero, okay?
So that's the usual Josephson effect, for example. You apply bias, you get an AC, you get an AC current.
Stationary means DC, in DC.
Yeah.
So what is strange with stationary?
No, nothing. I'm just, because you said this is some nice theory, I mean, everybody would expect it as a stationary heat current between two reservoirs with different temperatures.
No, it depends. If you are manipulating inside with a time-dependent tension, it's no more this, no?
But do you do this?
We are not doing this, but in their theory, everything is not time dependent, so it's stationary.
It's not stationary. Current depends on the phase. That's what it means. It's not an end that is exclusive. That's the sentence.
But if I may add, I mean, if you look at electric currents through a DC electric current through a Josephson junction, it can create also an AC component. One does not necessarily expect such in principle, one could say, okay, maybe there is also an AC component in the heat current.
I see. Okay.
Because it's highly non-linear.
I see.
Exactly.
Fully non-linear review. So. Yes. Okay. So this was the idea. And okay, just a few notes on how to what to expect from the heat current. So phi is the phase difference between the two condensates, two different temperatures. There is a heat current in the system. Okay, the heat current can be written as a sum of fewer quasi-particle contribution, phase-independent quasi-particle contribution, depending only on the temperature of the two reservoirs, and a phase-dependent part that we will call Q interference, whose amplitude depends on the temperatures and depends on the phase according to the cosine of the phase, okay? So it's a very nice expression, so I'm saying, very simple expression. In the original formulation, there was a plus here. So Martin Griffith committed an error. And we confirmed that it's a minus, okay? So, and so this means that for phi equal to zero, basically, and for different temperatures, the phase-dependent contribution is maximized, it is flowing in the opposite direction. So it's pretty peculiar. Of course, the sum of them, the two terms, will be always positive, okay? So we can never exceed with the phase-dependent component the phase-independent part. Then we can easily write down the two expressions. The first one, pure quasi-particle, is just the energetic contribution of all the states, okay, so it's the energy convolution of density of state of two superconductors and the difference of the Fermi distribution function of the left on the right. This interference part is due to the anomalous function, so the green function is also is the convolution of the energy and the density of state of Cooper pairs in one part of the F, okay, and with the same scheme. So we can point out that if the temperature is identical of the superconductor, both components are zero. Of course, there is no heat current to the system. And the interference part is zero if one of the superconductors is normal. So you need the coupling of two superconductors, and even more, you have to be Josephson coupled, okay? In order to have a precise relation between the coupling depending on the phase. So we need two superconductors to be Josephson coupled. And this way you have a full heat current, which consists of one phase-independent part, on top of which is superimposed a sinusoidal oscillation as a function of the temperatures. This is very simple, and one can try to understand how to monitor, okay, and how to create an experiment based on these kind of things. The idea would be, for instance, to make interference, because it's a standard way to detect some physical ondulatory behaviors. Okay, so if we think of a thermally biased squid, so this is squid, a ring where the two superconductors reside at different temperatures, we'll have some phase-dependent heat current components that are related to the flux, eventual external flux producing the system. And how we do this is very simple. We write down the full heat current for the system as a sum of the quasi-particle part and the interference part, where the
quasi-particle part is the sum of the heat current flowing one direction and the other direction. Okay? And then we just impose flux quantization in the system, flux current quantization, and the circulating charge current conservation, because whenever we apply flux, there will be a supercurrent, not dissipation current, flowing in the system. So the flux current quantization plus circulating current conservation allows to determine which is the final heat current in the system. So to solve for the phases drop, phi A and phi B, across the two junctions. If R denotes the asymmetry of the critical current, or let's say the junction resistance in the two squids, we can write the interference part with a very nice expression that, for example, is identical to the expression for charge. It's the same identical expression. So, and in the case of a fully symmetric squid, when R is equal to 1, we see that the interference component is just 2 times the heat current, so this one and this one that are identical, times the absolute value of the cosine. So this is identical to the expression of the charge Choison effect in a fully symmetric interferometer. So there is a perfect duality. Okay?
So coming back to your comment about the entropy that's being carried here, because if you're in a full superconducting state, the Cooper pairs, they carry no entropy. So to have this kind of heat transport, you have to play with games with quasi particles, right? So you have to be relatively high temperature to see this effect. If you go to too low temperature,
yes, exactly.
It kills everything.
And whenever this is finite, so if real life is always finite,
so
you
have
plus part.
You have some quasi, yes.
They can be a small amount, just low temperature, or you can strongly repeat in order to emphasize all these effects. And this is what we are exactly doing. Okay, so from this it follows that in order to maximize the visibility of interference of heat in a thermal interferometer, we would require the most symmetric squid as possible, in some sense, because this would give rise to a large swing, whereas when R is finite, when R is different from 1, this will lead to a suppressed modulation as expected for any charge interferometer. Okay, so basically, what to expect? So if we look at the phase-dependent part of the heat current, that is shown here on the y-axis, the function of the flux, for some fixed temperature, so we see that by changing the asymmetry of the squid, so 0 means no fully asymmetry, 1 fully symmetric, so we see that is like for charge, so it's a finite dependent function, the current, okay, that nulls at half integral values of the flux quantum. And you see that it oscillates between 1 plus R and 1 minus R times 1 or 2 heat current in the system. And so that reducing the symmetry reduces the visibility and makes more sinusoidal the behavior of the heat current. Okay, so the cusp appear in the case of very symmetric interference. Okay? If we look at the total heat current behavior for a symmetric squid, so for R equal to 1, we obtain this behavior here. So this is the sum of the phase-independent and the phase-dependent part. Fixing one temperature in one superconductor and changing the temperature of the other superconductor. So we see that for sufficient low temperature gradient, there is a small nonlinearity appearing here. Increasing more the temperature, this the average level becomes larger because we are inducing more heat current in the system. At the same time, the amplitude of oscillation becomes larger and larger. Eventually approaching the critical temperature, it starts to be reduced, and when one of the superconductors goes into the normal state at TC, it's TC, let's say, there is no more modulation, because one of the two electrodes is no more superconducting, so it's no more transport electrode. So, as you see, it's a quite complicated behavior, it's fully, of course, nonlinear, so of course, it depends what you want to do with this kind of system, and which kind of temperature you want to use in order to emphasize it, to amplify the visibility effect. So, okay, this was the idea in a double-slit interferometer. So, let's go to the experiment. The idea is to have this ring the two junctions in parallel, and it is piloted by a flux that controls the heat flowing from one hub to the other called the superconducting region. So in a symmetric case, we have the total that we are saying. We are saying the total heat current is just the sum of the quasi-particle contributions that are identical here in the case of full symmetry, minus two times the absolute value of the cosine phi w of phase energy. It was the prediction part the sign of Martinus. And okay, so this was already an experiment of 6 years ago. And what is the idea? The idea is exactly to implement the scheme that was shown in the cartoon at the beginning of the slide. So we have one normal reservoir, copper, one branch of the interferometer. This is the interferometer. You see, this is the hotter part corresponding to this, heated by the tunnel contact with the hot source. The other part of the interferometer is this one, is the cold one that extends in a very large bed. So this is well thermalized to the bath. And then is connected here another very small thermal capacitance, non-metal electrode, in order to implement it. This would be the drain, so where we monitor the effective flow modulated by this guy here. Okay, so the experiment is performed. We heat this guy here with the heaters, this superconducting transduction, and we monitor the temperature of the system. This will induce a heat flow in this direction here, but will create also a thermal gradient between one part of the squid and the other. Okay? So if this component of Martin Griffin, let's say, does exist, this can be modulated thanks to the flux. So this flux will alter the exchange of heat between this part and this part. So the resulting one in this mole heat capacitance, let's say, normal drain. Then by monitoring the thermometer, the temperature in the normal metal electrode here as a function of the flux, we can see if the heat current, so the temperature in this guy here, is effectively modulating with the flux. If this occurs, it means that we have induced a phase-dependent heat current in the front. Okay? So everything is very simple, I would say. So this is an experiment. So the temperature in the drain is a function of the flux imposed in the squid for different temperatures of the source. So the normal electrode is providing excitations, okay? Everything is performed in this case at 235 millikelvin of bath of lattice. And so we see that by increasing the temperature of the source, we're giving more excitations. What we do is that so monitoring the temperature, we see the temperature is phase dependent, so not only as expected. So the temperature reflects a heat current that is phase dependent in the system. Then you see this cusp form. The interferometer was very symmetric, and so this reflecting a cusp shape of the temperature in the system. What is amazing is that indeed, I mean, this is the temperature. The temperature is phase dependent, as one is expecting, thanks to this large heat flow that is investing the nominal electrode. And here you see, we obtain. This was a very first experiment, so we were very excited 6 years ago to see 21 millikelvin of modulation. That was the maximum, okay, swing in temperature. So it was something like 9% of relative modulation amplitude. Okay, that was pretty large at the time. And I mean, here one can plot in the full experiment the full swing. That is this curve here. Is a function of the temperature of the source and also the average temperature. And also you see that increasing the temperature of the source will increase the average level, of course, because there is a more pure quasi-particle independent phase contribution. And on top of this, there is the swing that is increased because it's a fully nonlinear process. At the end, the swing will tend to saturate at higher temperature, whereas the general average value tends to grow up. Okay? But this is more or less the general behavior of the system. So how do you...
Yeah. Maybe you'll talk about this. You can see this increase in your contrast is probably due to the number of equilibrium quasi-particles increasing as you increase the temperature.
I mean, you are increasing a lot of the heat current, the general heat current. So you increase the temperature, so you have more excitation.
And so then what sets the saturation?
In the visibility is due to the fact that if you study basically at some point it's not in the system we cannot create much more thermal gradient. This is the point.
because some energy is released to one point and the other to the funnels. So it's a delicate balance among several channels of propagation. So what is difficult in all these thermal circuits is that differently from a charge circuit where the charge is in a, from A to B is in generally conserved, okay? In thermal experiment, I mean, you have to take into account where you are losing all your energy. So is you have to construct a system where, for instance, in this system here, we have the source selector, it is connected to the screen, okay? And the source releases energy to the phononic path. The source, the one electrode of the superconductor releases to the path itself, the second part indeed, and then there are all the coupling between them. And the last one released with the phonons, and eventually maybe with the photons of the environment. So the difficult thing, I mean, we know that the energy in total is conserved. And then, so we have to take into account all the possible heat losses to the system. So in this sense, it's much more difficult than we expect to a charge experiment. So if we set, I mean, thermal balance equation, that is a system of nonlinear integral equation based on the time transfer and time method I've shown to you, that takes into account in each system the sum, stating that the sum of the input power and the output power is zero steady state, we can solve and theoretically expect what is the final drain temperature as a function of the flux in the system. Okay, so we have to solve this delicate balance among different equations that takes into account that all the incoming and outgoing heat flux in each subsystem is going to zero the steady state. So if we compare this to the theory, we obtain, for instance, for the parameters of the screen, a quite nice agreement. So the colored curve are just the selected curves, and the yellow dashed line is the expected behavior from the transfer of the electron. So basically, the equations must be combined with the electron phonon relaxation in the system. So we see that at the end, and this is the same for the saturation and the other, so the dashed line is the theoretical expectation. That also in this case, I mean, the very basic time Newtonian method is able to provide the expected behavior. What is interesting is that the minus in front of the phase-dependent part is confirmed by this positive concavity of the curve, because if for a negative, they were completely reversed. So this is it's nice to recall that in the same year, maybe 1 year later, there was the group in Yale of Sherlock, anyway, and Johann Popp demonstrated in the charge behavior of SIS junction. There is also in the charge component the charge current is cosine component. This is very famous. And in that case, they, thanks to the 2-qubit technology, they demonstrated the existence of this this phase cosine component in the charge current that has opposite sign with respect to this. So it was found that in the same period we addressed the thermal part with the correct sign, and they had a direct demonstration, and it was also a Nature paper, something like this. So, okay. What is the second part you were saying? Single slit interference. So the idea is to try to create thermal quantum diffraction. So in analogy to the electric diffraction to a rectangular slit in a Johnson junction, this was the first demonstration of the Johnson charge effect in the 60s. Okay, so they realized an extended Johnson junction with some field in plane, and this was making the junction to interfere with itself. Okay, so the phase was changing. Thanks for that. And this was the resulting critical current phase, the current phase relation as a function of flux. So you see this Fraunhofer-like pattern where the critical current moves at integer values of flux quantum to this region here. So the idea was to see if it's possible in analogy to obtain diffraction of thermal current, so two different temperatures, and the same speed in an extended junction to obtain a sort of diffractive behavior of the heat current through the system. The answer is yes. Indeed, just to recall a few concepts, no? So one can realize any kind of junction, SIS junction, for instance, rectangular, circular, anywhere, depending on the shape
of the junction, one will obtain a different pattern of the current phase relation in extended junction. Okay, depends. So one typically imposes a flux entering in the plane of the whiteboard, and the typical current is just basically the Fourier transform of the supercurrent density along the y-axis. Okay. And for a rectangular junction, what comes out is that this pattern translates in this sine current, okay? So the rollover pattern that what I was showing before. And for instance, for a circular junction, you can obtain a Reed pattern. And for an annular junction, it's a more complicated combination of Bessel function, and the state of the junction depends on the number of flux also trapped inside this. So in principle, with this kind of junction, one can create a very exotic pattern of heat current in the system. Okay? We concentrate on the first because the rectangular one is the simplest in some sense. No? So what we obtained is to produce or realize a sort of extended rectangular Johnson junction at this thermal barrier. So this is a junction from top. Two parts residing at different temperatures. So we use the same scheme as before. So the source that induces a heat current in this particular and overheats this part of the junction, and then there is a small drain electrodes connected to thermometry, and then of course there is an in-plane field that makes the heat currents in the junction to interfere and to diffract. So we expect basically that the heat the thermal response, the temperature in this electrode field will follow a sort of diffractive pattern, okay? If we look at the supercurrent, for instance, the critical current, the electric critical current of the junction, the magnetic interference part is exactly given by these black dots, okay? So you see that if we monitor independently the charge current, the critical current system, this is providing this Fraunhofer-like pattern in the system, okay? And it nulls at the integral values of plus values through the junction. Okay, so we expect that the temperature behaves in some similar fashion. Okay, so let's see what is going on. If we just to give you the flavor, so here this was all these measurements were recorded at the time of 214 Kelvin, so the base temperature of a helium 3 refrigerator. And so here on this part we see the temperature in the drain electrode is a function of the flux for different values of heating in the source electrode. Okay, so from bottom to the higher part, we are increasing the heat in the system. So we see that the system is characterized by cusp, and then by increasing the heat as before, we increase the general level, okay, of temperature. And then at some point, they come up this lamp element on top of this structure. That are indeed manifestation of this diffraction junction. So these are just a few selected cures of the left for one device and the second device. And from 500 millikelvin to 700 millikelvin temperature. And we see that they are compared with the black cures that are obtained from the transferring point methods that I was saying before, using the sine cardinal as the diffraction pattern for the junction. Okay, so we see that the temperature as well shows oscillations and the minima exactly where is expected, so for integral values of the flux, okay, to the junction. What is interesting, so that this experiment provides the confirmation of the Joisson effect, the thermal Joisson effect in extended Joisson junction, as it was done, let's say 6 years ago, for the chart where the interference of the the charge Joisson current in a double slit and single slit experiment were fundamental to assess the nature of the phase dependent nature of the Joisson effect. Okay, so as I was saying before, the quality of the interferometer is of course important in order to maximize or try to maximize the visibility in the system, the visibility of oscillation, okay? And one can imagine, sometimes it's not so easy to implement a fully, let's say, symmetric system in order to improve the heat transfer and modulation. So there is one effective, very effective way to do this kind of thing, is to realize a sort of balance the heat interferometer. So to replace one of the differentials with an additional interferometer. Okay. So here we, in principle, one can have two independent fluxes. What one can demonstrate from a theoretical point of view, that this kind of interferometer gives an enhancing control over the flux to heat current transfer function. And thanks, so this can be constructed ad initio asymmetrically, but it can be demonstrated that if the critical current in the central junction, for instance, is comprised between the difference and the sum of the two junctions, there is always a way, there is always a combination of phi 1 and phi 2 that leads to the full suppression of the interference component. So in principle, this is saying that we can construct in this way whatever kind of interferometer, and in any case, we can balance, so we can suppress, we can obtain the maximum visibility thanks to this additional degree of freedom. Okay, so this one was also tested in 2 years before our idea in charge. Okay, and what is nice is that one can think in more sophisticated thermal object to drive independently phi 1 and phi 2 in time, so to have, for instance, to implement pumping, heat pumping cycles, for instance, a time-dependent heat engines based on the phase. This would be the first building block to do this. Okay. So what we decided to do is that, in principle, whatever interferometer you create from the charge point of view can be duplicated in heat. And this is what we want to show. So we realized a more sophisticated double ring interferometer with a very complicated current phase pattern for the charge current. And the result was that it's possible, yes, to implement the same characteristic on heat. Okay, so there is, now we are able to tailor in principle whatever heat current in a more sophisticated way, thanks to inclusion of several, let's say, rings and several phase in the system. So this was, for instance, okay, it was implemented again, the same scheme, the source, the core is a more complicated interferometer, so the drain, where we monitor the response. This double ring interferometer is pierced by a common flux, and the two rings only possess different areas, okay? So in this sense, we can have different fixed flux to the two interferometers. So if we look, first of all, let's concentrate on the charge response of the system by measuring the critical current of the system, and that is shown here, the charge current as a function of the flux, at different bath temperatures from 25 to 1.5 Kelvin. So you see that the critical current possesses this very complicated pattern, okay, thanks to the beating of the two periods in this function. And this is indeed a very complicated pattern that occurs and depends on how, what is the ratio between the two rings, the area of the two rings, okay? But what is interesting, for instance, that this one can be easily reproduced with a very simplified RSSG model, okay? Resistance, the capacitively coupled model for time injection. So, I mean, it's indeed complicated, the behavior, but with the RSSG model, one can really take into account all this fancy behavior in the experiment. Okay. What is more interesting is that if we look in a specific part of the phase, the critical current can be suppressed largely. So there is a way where it goes with respect to the standard one, with the normalized one, it is from 100 to 1,000 times smaller. So the critical current suppression can be suppressed by 99%, even though the system is very asymmetric. So this is showing that in charge we can do this. So even though the system is very symmetric, the construction, there is a combination of phases where we can fully suppress the interference part of the charge current.
Is this a response to the bottom oscillations of the left plot?
Which one?
This is voltage drop. It corresponds, so you take one phase by one and you look at the lower oscillations?
Yes. I don't understand your question, sorry. So this is the critical current in the system. The charge current is a function of the flux imposed to the system.
It's just a zoom of
this
some
one is for much larger, you see. It's minus 10, so is very here.
But it's similar to
this. Yes. It's similar, but it goes at the amplitude goes to zero. Exactly. So there is a way where one can really suppress the components, so one you can construct whatever interferometer, then find the parameters in phase that allows you to maximize the stream of suppress this.
And these currents are flowing through the loops, is that right? Where the fluxes are threading?
Yes, sorry.
The current that you're talking about, I0, is it one that flows circulating around the loop?
No, it's the current going from one side to the other. Is the trespassing current from, it's a critical current of the squid.
Of the squid?
Yes. So you measure from this guy here through this guy here.
Yes, so that's the loop.
Yes.
But when you have that squid loop current circulating, do you also have current going from source to drain?
In charge, you mean?
In charge.
In charge, yes. No, in charge, no. I mean, they are all going here, and here, of course. There's a combination of two.
Yeah. Okay.
Because we are imposing the current from one superconducting part here and here. So the charge will follow this path here. When we impose the thermal gradient between this guy and the rest, this will impose a thermal gradient between this and this. By the point we open the circuits here electrically. Okay, so there will be only circulating current in this guy here. And the circulation of the current will impose a phase landscape that allows to control the heat current from this part to this part here. This is the idea. So now we demonstrated that there is a possibility to suppress up to 99%, so by construction, no? Okay, because this was the idea. So let's see what is going on from the thermal point of view. From the thermal point of view, we obtain something, so the temperature in the drain, so we open electrically the circuit, and we close thermally the circuit, as we are saying, and we examine what is going on. The temperature of the drain is a function of the phase for different temperatures of the source, okay? Yes, so we increase the general level, and then there is all this very complicated pattern that exactly reflects what is going on electrically in the phases in the system, okay? In the system here, we obtain a 40 millicalorie temperature swing. A 40 millicalorie temperature swing is pretty large, okay? It's pretty large because it's something at the base of 25 millicalorie, okay? And what is interesting is that interesting to understand that suppression of the critical current, indeed, of the super sorry, of the phase-dependent part of the heat current, is the same as the charge part, so 99% and even better. And it is obtained for the same values where you obtain the other. So this is demonstrated basically, if you, whatever complicated interferometer of charge you create, the same can be obtained also in heat. If you look, for instance, at these kind of curves here, they are fitted with standard transfer intermediate, you see that indeed the behavior is fairly nice, I would say. So this confirms that, I mean, all these thermal models use Tanner-Newtonian methods combined with educated guess for the heat transfer of the system can really provide a nice description from the practical point of view of the expected heat charge, heat current in the system. Okay? Okay, so I was saying, let's see, we have seen a kind of interference, so single slit, double slit. Another very important circuit that probably you know very well is the existence of or the possibility to create a pi-Joulson junction. What is a pi-Joulson junction for charge? A pi-Joulson junction for charge is a junction in whose current phase relation there is a shift of pi inside, okay? Yes, so there is nothing extremely complicated, but I mean, from the technological point of view, it's important because with the pi-junction, you can construct interesting elements in quantum computing, for instance. So this can be very useful. So the idea, I mean, pi junction has been realized with non-equilibrium, by using non-equilibrium in kink, or thanks to ferromagnetic elements, okay? So it's something extremely interesting, both from the fundamental physics and the application part of it. So our goal was to implement a 0 pi phase controllable thermal junction. Okay, so a junction, a thermal junction that is able to completely rotate the phase difference in order to go to pi, in order to provide a sign plus in front of the phase dependent part. Okay? So for a standard zero junction, if this is our junction, we know the quasi-particle part of the current pure this follows flows from the hot to the cold part, whereas the phase-dependent part has this minus, so it flows from the cold to the hot part. Okay? So the idea is to realize a sort of, let's say, sealed radio frequency interferometer that is based on three Joyce junction, but characterized by the fact that the Joyce coupling this junction here is the weakest, so the full kinetic Joyce induction in the system is dominated by the smaller junction. So all the phase drop occurs here. So by changing the phase across piercing, the magnetic field piercing the field, we can go from 0 to pi in all the rotation. If the phase around this junction reaches pi, this means that we will be able to invert completely the flow of the phase-dependent part with respect to this. So it will flow from the hotter to the colder part. So apart from the interest itself, a demonstration of a pi state in a thermal Joyce junction, this will show the fact that by rotating completely the phase, we can make a huge modulation of heat in the system, because we can change completely the sign in front of the superimposed independent modulation. Okay? So this is a more complicated circuit where we achieve this, let's say, sealed radio frequency squid, where you see there is this hot part, this one part of the squid, that is this part here, that is made hot with the injection of the particles. There are thermometers, Joyce thermometers, using the technique of measuring the temperature dependence of the Joyce field current. And then there are these three junctions, 1, 2, and 3, okay? So this is RA, this junction here, RB is this, and RJ is this. So this is a smaller junction, so this possesses the smaller junction coupling. So whenever we impose a flux here, all the phase drop will occur mainly in this part here. So thanks to the flux, we can go from zero, this situation here, to pi here. So here, basically, we'll invert the heat flow with respect to the other parts. Okay, so the result of this this gain here is that if we monitor the temperature in the drain in a different way, we can have a nice interference pattern of the temperature, let's say, here for different power, injected power in the source electrode, and as a function of the temperature. So you see in this this large oscillation where the swing in this case is up to 100 millikelvin at 25 millikelvin. So it means that we are able to modulate the temperature of four times the temperature of the bulb. Okay, so it means that this interferometer is able to provide swing of, if we were at room temperature, of roughly 120 Celsius with respect to 30 Celsius, something like this. So enormous. Okay, so this thanks to the fact that we can rotate completely the phase. So this is able indeed to provide a super large modulation of this. Basically, it's the best thermal modulation that we have been able to implement. Okay. And what is interesting is that thanks to the superconducting, fully superconducting nature of the structure, the electron quantum coupling is still very weak, also sufficiently high temperature. So, I mean, the superconductor can be well overheated at very large temperature, up to temperature approaching the critical temperature. Okay, so we can still observe a time with Kelvin swings of 20 millikelvin temperature, very high. So we have been also extending the operative range, temperature operative range of our interferometers. Okay, and if we look at other interesting properties, so if we look at this object as instruments able to modulate the heat current or the temperature, one interesting figure of merit is the flux to temperature transfer function. So basically, the derivative of the temperature with respect to the flux. So this means that in this case here, we can obtain almost a variation, as they are very sharp, of 1 Kelvin per phase zero. So this can be, as you can imagine, an interesting instrument to complement other quantum circuits for manipulation of it, thanks to this very strong response. So this is another interesting thermology that we realized pretty recently. So now I'm going to the end to show you the very last object that can be useful for instance, to implement thermal machines. Okay. So up to now, we have realized and have shown to you single output core electronic device. So we have one normal metal, then there is the core that is one quantum object inside, and then there is one drain electrode, one single drain electrode. With this, we obtain the first interferometer, the diffractor, this double ring, we obtain this pi junction. I didn't show to you the rectification, but also in the rectification we have a single output device, okay? So thermal rectification stuff. Now the idea is it possible to route the thermal currents in a heat current, okay? So to distribute heat currents among different circuits in order to obtain to manipulate spatially the heat fluxes on chip. The answer is yes. Okay. So if we look at the possible implementation, it's the following. So the idea is to implement a thermal router based on the Joyce effect, so to make this phase tuner. So the idea is to have a hot source, a sort of knob that operates on the phase, and this knob is able to change the thermal currents from one drain to the other drain. Okay, so for some values, for instance, for integral values of flux, this drain here will be more hot than the other because more heat current is directed in this way. And for, let's say, half integral value of the flux, this one will be less hot and this other will be hotter with respect to the other state. Okay, so typically, if we're able, we can make several of these drains here. So, but the first implementation was done with just two drains to show this property here. Then what is interesting, so this kind of object can operate as a heat splitter. Okay, so we are splitting heat among different objects. So the splitting refers to the fact that the two temperatures in one electrode and the other electrode, one is over always larger than the other, okay, and they are modulated thanks to the phase. Then there is another interesting behavior, it is the swapping of the temperature. So there is a regime where the temperature of one reservoir can be in some ranges of the phase larger than the other, and some other range can be smaller than the other. So we can invert the temperature of the system, okay? In this kind of router, thermal router, so we implemented both the splitting regime and the swapping regime. And basically, what determines the splitting of the two, so the zero oscillation around an average value, is the phase, whereas this property here is given by the exchange with the phase. So to have swapping, so to invert the temperature that are always, of course, in anti-phase, you need a mechanism that allows more easily to release energy in one regime with respect to the other, so to invert this trend. Okay? So, what is interesting, the system is very simple, so we start, we use again a squid, but with two outputs, in this case. There is the hot source and two drains, okay? The idea we inject power in this part. And this is our system. So there is a source. This is our interferometer of heat that is connected to one drain and the second drain. As I was saying, there is this, so the general oscillation around an average value for given parameters, construction parameters, is given by the phase. Okay, so the splitting and the general modulation of temperature of drain 1 and drain 2. The possibility to have a swapping is given by how good is the coupling of this electrode here to the funnels of the system, okay? So in this way one can decide, constructing the splitter, how much will be the temperature swapping of the system. The temperature shock is interesting because, as you can imagine, one can construct with this a system where the temperature, I mean, if this becomes time dependent in the swappy regime, it means the temperature of train 1 and train 2 becomes time dependent. They can be inverted one respect to the other. So one can make a thermodynamical cycle based on this idea here. So this can be the starting point to realize time-dependent, real time-dependent thermal electronic machines. So this is just the general scheme that we use to analyze our system. So there is the source, this is the squid, this is the drain, there are all the springs are thermal connection with the phonons of the bath, with the phonons of the superconductors here, with the one part and the other part of the squid. Here there is a second drain, and two blue reservoirs are the phonons in the two drains. Okay? But let's concentrate basically on these two panels here. So on the left we have the two temperatures in the two drains, 1 and 2, for different temperatures of the source, okay, from 200 to 300 Kelvin, and as a factor of flux, okay, the system. So we see that the thin line corresponds to the temperature in drain 1 and the thick line in drain 2. So, okay, now we are accustomed to this. So we see that both of them are phase dependent, okay? But then you see, of course, they are in anti-phase, as we are saying. So one has a standard cusp with positive concavity, this guy here, and the other is in anti-phase because for the same one, it has a minimum, okay? So we see that at the average, they are easily splitted in some sense, depending on the original parameter of the junctions, and they have different average values. Then by increasing the temperature of the lattice, so by changing the interaction with the phonon, for instance, in this electrode here, we go in the regime of fully splitting to swapping. So for 300 mK, they're almost coincide when one is maximum and the other minimum, and then here they go in the swapping regime, okay? This swapping regime can be controlled as well thanks to fixing the bath temperature, so the phononic interaction, and then by changing the temperature of this guy here. So by changing the heat that we induce in the system for fixed interaction in the bath, we can go from low power when we have the swapping to high power where the two Qs tend to separate. Become completely non-overlapping, okay? So what is to my interesting is that okay, this was the very first example. So if you look for instance two regimes, so the swapping regime and the splitting regime, so splitting regime full separation, and you see the dashed curves are those obtained for the simplified model of steady state of the transparent fluid method. So with the parameter of the structure we can reproduce nicely what is going on. And the swapping regime as well. Okay, so it is able the structure for the same parameter, the theory to reproduce the behavior in all these regimes. And for instance in this case here, the swapping temperature was something like 6 or 7 mK. Okay? So it is still not enormous, but it can be improved in terms of by changing the structure part. Okay? So if we collect here on the right what is going on for the system, so the width of each band is the swing, and then for one electron the other electrode, and the separation means that there is no swapping. Okay, when they start to swap means that there is swapping. Okay, for different buffers. So you see that in this map is an experimental map determined from the different system. There are four regimes where the system can be just a splitter, and the regime where, from here, at sufficiently low injection power, it starts to behave as a swapper here and a splitter here, or here, for instance, is always in the swapping regime. So, according to this, one can design more sophisticated blocks based on this idea here to implement thermal machines, in some sense. Okay, so I want to finish and jump to summarize what I was talking about. So I've shown the realization of the very first thermal interferometer based on the Johnson effect. Okay, so a double junction interferometer, which was the first demonstration, that have confirmed the existence, the magnitude and sign of the phase-dependent heat current in combination with diffraction in an extended Johnson junction. Moreover, we have seen how a double-loop Johnson thermomodulator can provide a complete phase engineering of electronic heat current in the nanoscale. So this is a building block to realize more sophisticated modulator, for instance. And I have shown the realization of the first controllable 0.5 thermal Johnson junction, so a system that allows to completely rotate the phase and so to add much more thermomodulation in the system. At the very end, I've shown the first implementation of a tunable Johnson router, okay, with large temperature separation and sizable temperature inversion, few millikelvin, let's say. According to our vision, this can be the gateway to realize mesoscopic thermal machining when be driven by time-dependent fluxes. Okay, so I wish to thank you for your time, for your attention, and thanks again.
Okay, questions? Oh, Benjamin.
So in the case of the zero pi Johnson junction, so I'd like to understand better what's how does this this kind of engine works, right? Because you have the zero pi.
Zero pi, yes.
So if you basically you can prepare two reservoirs at one hot, one cold, and have a steady heat flow from the cold to the hot reservoir.
Yes.
So basically I don't understand how this machine works, right? Where is the
that one was not a machine. That one was the demonstration of that one can completely rotate the phase of the system if you design properly your junction, let's say.
Yeah. But you cannot have that with two baths and no work or
so maybe I think that was going it was still flowing from hot to cold.
Yes.
It's just getting more current.
Exactly. Because you completely rotate the phase off pi. Okay. Because in a standard interferometer, in a standard Johnson junction, you can go from minus pi half to plus pi half.
Yeah.
And in DC squid as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can never go in the other equation. This is the point.
Yes,
to pi.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a trick to make a sort of pseudo RF squid where the full phase drop occurs at the junction.
Yes.
So like in an RF squid, you can rotate by pi.
Yeah.
And so to give this add this plus, and so to have the full thermal modulation in the system.
Okay, but we agree that the heat flux goes from hot to cold.
Yeah.
Still.
Of course.
Okay.
We were just changing the sign of the phase dependent part.
Right, okay.
That in the standard system, not pi, let's say, flows at zero phase from the cold to the hot.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the full sum, I mean, we are not violating.
Okay, good.
Would be nice, but yes.
Well, just curious about the critical current of these junctions. I guess some point I saw it was like 100 nanoamps. How does the critical current play a role? Is there a reason why it's smaller or larger? Or is it just what you end up with these size scales?
Well, the critical current is, at least in tunnel junction, directly inversely proportional to resistance of junction.
Yeah.
And the same is for the heat current. So it's a directly inversion portion to the resistance of the junction. So they behave in the same way. They go together, in some sense. So the more heat current you want, if you want to maximize the heat current, you have to lower the resistance of the junction. This is the resistance. But then this sometimes is not always useful. Because maybe you want to create some to prevent too much heat in one part of the surface. So you want to establish a nice temperature gradient. So it's something a little bit more complicated. But in general, I mean, if I am answering to your question, yes, the lower the resistance, the higher would be the heat current. Yes, of course. Yeah.
Okay, in all the cases you studied, you never have Andreyev states in the junction, right?
Well, these are basically tunnel junctions. Of course, in our system, the junctions are not, I mean, these are at real junctions, so you have always maybe some more transparent channels in the system. So yes, that can be attributed to pinholes, or if they are not really pinholes, to regions in the pie that is thin. So there is more under-reflection in the left, of course. So this is typically taken into account by adding a phenomenological imaginary part in the density of state of the system. Okay? So this can be Lines parameter. Okay? And this, in some sense, takes into account any, let's say, quasi-particle state within the gas. But yes, phenomenologically, it takes into account also maybe some pinholes that there are some additional direction. But this, I mean, it is a very hand-waving way to take into account many different and complicated aspects in this thermal series. But yes, I mean, there is for sure some other reflection, some non-idealities that we cannot explain with the standard time Newtonian method, of course, maybe are related to noise, external noise in the thermometry, spurious under-reflection, and so forth. Tiny with respect to the rest. So the name is tiny. Mm-hmm. Then there is also probably non-idealities in the junction that provide a small amount of under-reflection.
But I think that the Andreev levels within the gap in the junction can add, can actually contribute to the coherence rather than spoiling.
Well, I mean, if we maybe I should understand better what you have in mind. If we look just at some, let's say, spurious, I was saying, no? We have an imaginary part of the gap, but this doesn't add, is incoherent in some sense, this. And how we treat this incoherent?
I think
in the way we
treat it. Because maybe that's not necessary.
Maybe not necessarily. Maybe there is a possibility within the gap to have states that acts coherently. This is a good point. At the moment, let's say, we do not have evidence of how important they can be, but definitely this would be interesting to investigate.
But yeah, as you say, there are millions of transmission channels in the junction anywhere.
Yes, millions. Small, but 100 nanometers square. Mm-hmm. So these are small, not super small, but still small. Mm-hmm. And there are several channels. And maybe the judge is not fully ideal. So, which kind of mechanism do you have exactly in mind saying this?
I'm thinking like the ones you have, for instance, in atomic contacts. So, I'm somehow thinking in a very different gene. You are in somehow more macroscopic case.
Yeah.
But in the case of atomic junctions, you have just a few levels within the gap. And they behave coherently. So I was wondering which role they could play in the heat.
Okay, now this is another kind of junction, huh?
Yeah.
So this is a transparent weak link. It's not a tunnel like link in some sense. Mm-hmm. If we take a S and S junction, SNS, okay, no, not a common, super normal super. The super normal super, all the transport is due to the modification of the spectral property of the metal, not in this way. So Andreev bound states, and this of course. So I mean.
No, but I was wondering, do you have in mind what do you expect something radically different?
Yes. The answer is yes. If now we are making an experiment, we start an experiment with SNS to make interferometer with transparent link, okay, not tunnel like SNS, so mesoscopic junctions. And indeed, the current phase relation of heat is completely different. Is no more sinusoidal, has many harmonics, as one can imagine. And the sign is even changed. Mm-hmm. So going from an opaque tunnel regime to a transparent regime, the minus goes into plus.
Okay.
So it's very peculiar, this. Mm-hmm. And indeed, all these things go to both phases.
Of the interference term.
Yes. So it changes the test. Yes. Yes. But now we have to see. The more difficult stuff to my mind with the transparent weak links is that being transparent is difficult to maintain a well-defined gradient. Mm-hmm. If you have a tunnel junction, it is a bottleneck in some sense. Not hot, less hot. Mm-hmm. Well, there is a sort of door in between.
Yeah.
When there is a transparent stuff, I mean, also the weak link itself can provide some gradient of temperature inside. Mm-hmm. This would be interesting to understand. So maybe in terms of a pure devices, maybe they are less effective. Of course, they would be interesting because they will reveal other properties of mesoscopic interference, for sure. Mm-hmm. Hey. Oh, you're right, of course.
So let me ask something.
Yeah.
I would characterize everything that you presented here as coherent heat management.
Yes.
So if I wanted to now take some of these techniques and make a refrigerator or an engine, what would you do? Could it work, or do you have to add some more elements to this?
Well, to have a refrigerator, I mean, it depends on how you want to do this. So I can show you some very basic. So if we go back to suppose that you want to refrigerate this guy here. Okay. Now we are making, I mean, the simplest experiment is performed by heating, of course. To heat is always simple. To refrigerate sometimes can be very hard. So suppose that we want to cool this guy here, to make this colder with respect to the thermals. Okay. So what do we do? The idea is to cool this guy here, and then to extract the hot excitation and to cool this right here. So to refrigerate, for instance, this guy here, thanks to superconducting refrigerators, for instance, because a superconducting tunnel junction can be operated as a refrigerator because you have the gap in the superconductor. So tunneling into the superconductor is a sort of evaporative cooling of electrons inside here. So this the tunneling mechanism provides cooling, sharpening of the particle distribution function of the standard.
But I think that's sort of like bringing another colder object to the extract heat from the.
Yes.
From the so that's one way of cooling an object, but now you can think about it in the way like our department refrigerators work. I can somehow add work to this system and then extract energy from a cold to a hot reservoir.
Yeah, we are doing work in the same way. We have our generator to do this. So there is no difference. The point is that this is steady state. This study is time independent. Your machine is time independent, but this is time independent. Of course, if you look at the size, I mean the tunneling of electrons, of course it's time dependent. But on the average, there is a net flow. No, the sets becomes time independent. But to do this, we connect here our generator, our battery. So we are energizing the system to provide energy to make work and to cool electrons here. And then to cool electrons here, so it's not different for your system. Your system is time-dependent, simple. But I mean, we can construct a time-dependent system in your view. And this is probably what you want to hear from me. Yes, of course, you can. You should implement different things related by a suitable thermodynamical circuit. This for sure. So to make maybe the fluxes to be pulsed in a different way in different parts of the circuit, is to implement sort of. Recently, we have been studying a sort of fraternal quantum field, we want to implement indeed, a sort of Joule-Son thermodynamical cycles, okay, based on the Joule-Son effect. So by changing the entropy of a Joule-Son junction, the Joule-Son entropy of the junction, you can, in principle, implement isoentropic plus isophasic cycle. So in the same spirit as an Otto cycle with a permanent, it's a Joule-Son cycle because you have the isophasic, no? It's the same as the isochoric formation in some sense. In this case, yes, of course. One can think to implement a heater of an engine or a reaction and reverse in the cycle exactly the refrigerator that you were saying. In this sense, this is work. I mean, if we refrigerate here with our battery, we are providing a lot of work. So we are connecting our battery. If the battery is dead, there is no more cooling, so no more work. But you agree, no? It's the same.
But the temperature on the left will be smaller than the temperature on the right.
The temperature on the left will be definitely smaller than the temperature on the right.
But then why do you need the right? So you're cooling the left.
Yes, but if I want to cool this guy here, you want maybe to cool this and maybe other parts of the circuits, no?
But the refrigerator will be that the smallest temperature that you achieve is the whatever the right one, right? But in your fridge at home, the smallest temperature is in the fridge. It's not in the engine that is doing the refrigeration. Mm-hmm. While you are saying, let's cool N1 to the lowest temperature and then bring something else, so you bring beer inside the fridge.
Exactly. Right. Okay. It's a different way to cool another object.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's a bit different.
Yes, I mean, this of course, if we concentrate on this reservoir here, the system is making work to cool the electrons inside.
N2 is like the beer, it's not the fridge.
It's not the fridge. Okay. And then you can cool, I mean, this is the beer.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we can cool several. This is the one way. Yes.
So maybe to continue on this refrigerator, so you probably know this absorption refrigerator where you have so a working fluid and a cold and hot bath and you engineer the interaction. So it's work in the steady state regime. You engineer the interaction between these three parts so that the working fluid will absorb one excitation from both of both hot and cold, and so it will cool the cold system to a temperature which is smaller from the initial cold mass.
Yeah.
And so this absorption refrigerator, could we imagine building it with these systems?
Well, this is, I mean, if we just concentrate on the fridge, as I was saying, if you use a superconductor to do this, this is a sort of evaporative cooling. So maybe it's not so far from what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So we are removing hot fuzzy particles from the normal metal, and this we can drive this well below the temperature of the furnace, for instance. So, and this why? Because we are using energy filters, no? I mean, this is the mechanism. Energy filters, like if you are using quantum dots, for instance. If you use a quantum dot, you can make some filters to shape the quasi-particle distribution fractions to cut the hot tails. Yes. So maybe it's not so far from the absorption stuff, because in the absorption, okay, because you tend to see this also in a time-dependent...
It's stationary.
It's stationary, yeah. So it's time-independent.
Yes.
Autonomous.
Yes.
Okay, this one, I don't know if it is autonomous or not. Maybe yes, it depends on how to define the autonomous. When you start the battery, it's autonomous in some sense, no? It goes. But you don't need the spark to start. So maybe not, I mean, it's more than autonomous. On autonomous, you need the spark, right, to start the engine.
But the autonomous, you would only have thermal resources, I would say, not the work source that you are.
The autonomous, you just have, thermal reservoirs.
Exactly. And you use this to cool even more the...
Yes, but to maintain, you need always something to maintain stuff at different temperatures. This is the point. So you need a lot of work to do this, because otherwise, fossil temperature, 2.7K, in the space.
So you prepare you heat something and then you...
Exactly. You need your heater to do the autonomous. So it's no more autonomous. This is the point. You need heating. You need the battery. Otherwise, it's not possible to implement realistically any autonomous engine. So there is no... I mean, the cost of to be autonomous is not autonomous. You need the heating. Otherwise, everything is the same temperature.
I mean, these baths are not infinite, so...
Yeah, exactly.
That's the point.
Yeah.
But I have another question, if I may.
Go ahead.
So... You have shown how the heat current can be modulated by the phase, no?
Yes.
So if I now imagine to change the phase slowly in time, I would adiabatically follow those lines that you have shown. and the current heat current will be modulated. I will always have heat going from hot to cold, but it you know the amount of
yes.
power will, yeah. will oscillate.
Exactly.
Now what if now so clearly this says that there is a that your heat current is coupled to the magnetic field, no? So if now I start driving this magnetic field faster, I mean not adiabatically, is there any hope that by means of some nonlinear some nonlinearity you can kind of invert the direction of heat and realize a refrigerator?
Yeah, maybe.
So
yes.
drive fast and hope. Is there any hope that this will actually invert totally the current so that you realize a refrigerator in this way by really injecting energy through this time-dependent magnetic field?
I'm not so sure in this sense.
It must be non-linear in order for, the coupling must be non-linear in order for anything to happen.
Well, all the couplings yes. here are not fully non-linear.
But, okay. so that's not, that's
no,
not sufficient.
I'm trying to think if it is possible. Because, maybe it would be possible. If I remember, a few years ago, we conceived a sort of cooler that was based on exactly this idea that you are saying. So to use a DC squid and to use a time-dependent flux, and what and to have the two part of the let's say the squid of different heat capacitance. Mm. And the idea was to use basically the fact that whenever you go to a minimum of the current phase relation, there is a swap of phase. Of pi in the squid. And this sudden swap of phase give rise to a sudden voltage across the junction. Okay? And this object here could be used for the time it exists, this pulse of voltage, to cool the system slower. So in some sense, it could be possible, but I mean, we never tried this, but it, at the time, it was already 3 or 4 years ago, so it was something that we conceived, but we never explored. But in principle, yes. So this is a good question. In principle, it is possible. It is possible.
Okay. Why don't we stop here? We can have further informal discussions after.